Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. University of Oklahoma creative writing and literature professor Honoré Fanon Jeffers is already a highly regarded poet with 5 published collections of poetry to her name, including her most recent, The Age of Phyllis, which was longlisted for the National Book Award last year. Now, with the publication of her epic first novel, The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois, you can now add acclaimed novelist to her work. The novel follows the story of a young black historian in training, Ailey Pearl Garfield, a daughter of an upwardly mobile professional family that lives in the, quote, city, unquote, but whose ancestral roots and emotional ties are firmly set in rural Georgia, the homestead of Chickasetta, that she regularly visited each summer where family still lives and her ancestors were enslaved. As Ailey uncovers the hidden part of her family's past while investigating a southern plantation family, ancient traumas and sexual assaults and other indignities over the past 250 years to her family's people are revealed through a series of lyric sections of the book, or songs, inspired by W.E.B. Du Bois's Sorrow Songs. They, in turn, help bring understanding to the contemporary issues that affect Ailey's family and personal life, including sexual assault and substance abuse. The book is a deep meditation on race, family, class, and feminism. Jeffers will be participating in a now virtual event with Magic City Books next Thursday at 7 o'clock, and The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois launches next week. Professor Jeffers, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This new book, The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois, is a epic first novel telling a story of a young woman who's learning her family history, a larger history of her place, the place she lives in, negotiating personal and family traumas, both present and past. It's a big book that begins with Oglethorpe landing in Georgia and ending in practically the present day. How did this story come to be for a person we know as a poet to write that first novel and such a big story?
Well, I first began writing fiction when I approached short stories many years ago when I was back in graduate school. My people, my mother's family, are from Eatonton, Georgia, which is in central Georgia. And I just got very lonely for my family. I was, you know, working so hard that I really couldn't spend a lot of time with my family. And so I began to sort of create a universe of alternate family members, people that I imagined. And that's how I began writing fiction. And then, you know, a few years later, when I finally got a literary agent, she suggested that I write a novel.
So is it safe to say that portions of the Love Songs started out as a short story? You were writing short stories about these characters, or did it ever get to that point?
I was writing short stories, but when my literary agent suggested that I write a novel, I was very resistant and I didn't want to do that. And so, but what happened was that I really, really loved my literary agent, Sarah Burns, and I wanted to keep her. So I lied to her that I was going to write a novel, but I never intended to do so. And so then what happened was Ailey, a short story that I was writing about Ailey, just sort of extended, but it was still, it was a light story. There wasn't, you know, people kind of laugh when I say it was a very unserious story. And I never intended to have these sort of serious issues. But then what happened was, while I was writing Ailey's portion, and that's all I ever intended to write, I began having dreams where I would see a plantation house in the distance. And people would come up to me in the dream and they would talk to me. And when I awoke, I would write down portions of what I remembered. And those were what became the song. And then the real work was how to connect these two different portions.
Now, we should talk about the songs. The book is framed by a series of songs, and those songs are inspired by W.E.B. Du Bois' sorrow songs from the Souls of Black Folks, mm-hmm. which were these sort of small stories that talk about how African Americans overcame, you know, everything from, you know, being pulled from their homelands, sold across the seas to, you know, surviving plantations, surviving freedom, surviving prejudice, and overcoming. And your book uses a series of these songs, if you will, as sort of a framing device to go through this very big story of your primary character, Ailey Pearl Garfield, who is at the same time sort of learning larger truths about her family story as a part of her education. So these came to you in dreams?
Yes, they did. And you know, at first, because, you know, I'm always working on a poetry book. So at first, I thought, oh, these are, you know, am I writing an epic? You know, is this are these epic poems? And then I began to realize, no, they were prose, even though the language was very lyrical. And so then the very hard work of trying to craft this into a narrative and to have character development and plot, that was, you know, it took me 9 years to write the draft that was acquired by my publishing house, HarperBooks, and then 2 more years to edit. But yes, they were very realistic, but also sort of dreamlike. And then there was a moment, probably about 1 or 2 years in, where Native American people came to me. That was a difficult portion because I didn't want to appropriate the culture. I do, according to family history, have Native American ancestry on both sides of my family. But since I was reared as African-American, I did not want to insult or appropriate Native American culture. And so the way that I made a compromise with that is I decided that all my Native American characters would be mixed race. They would be African and Native American. And that's how I was a little bit more comfortable.
And of course, that history has been intertwined in Georgia, even here in Oklahoma as
yes.
well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, as you mentioned, yes. that first song is goes back to Oglethorpe, the man who settled Georgia, came over mm-hmm. from England, and there he meets another culture already thriving, and that is the first sorrow song. Others include Africans being torn away from their homeland and being sold and taken across the ocean. Others follow along this long history that is slowly coming revealed to readers as this story takes place, of this long intertwined history with this family and this Pritchard family, the slave owners that mm-hmm. own them, that show up. And slowly secrets are revealed about them over the course of the book. I was really struck by something you said at one point. You said you wrote that you were attracted to the stories that your family would share late in the evening at family gatherings when they sat among themselves mm-hmm. sort of talking, and they would share family stories that probably weren't really for your ears, but they were, you know, sometimes the dark history, sometimes, you know, funny stories. But you were attracted to that from a very early age. What do you remember of those stories?
Well, one of the things, and I was, let me say, I was very careful that even though I was inspired by the stories, that the old folks told. And you're right, they weren't from my ears. I would always make sure that I was quiet in the corner because you would hear things that you knew you weren't supposed to hear. And then, you know, sometimes they come upon me and say, girl, get out of here, you know. And so then I'd sort of hang around in the hallway, right? But I'd still be listening. I'd still be eavesdropping. But I was very careful in the book that even though I was inspired by these stories, that I did not duplicate them and that I did not, you know, tell my own story, because there are such difficult portions in the book. I didn't want to get confused, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
About how I would feel and how the, you know, how, because when you have real family members, you know, you're kind of protective of them. But when you have characters, you have to move them around to suit the story. But I didn't feel like it was fair to move real people around. The stories that inspired me, my mother's great-grandmother was born enslaved. And she, her first memory was of her father being sold away. And it was interesting because no one ever said, you know, no one ever used these words traumatic, right?
Yeah.
Or hurtful. But it was obvious that this was very, very hurtful to her. And my mother used to talk about how great-grandma Mandy would try to make the little kids sit down and listen. But my mother was, you know, little, and she said she would be squirming and she wanted to go out and play. And so she said, you know, she would always say, I wished I had paid attention. And I think that what happened was that that impressed something upon me, you know, that others had not paid attention. But for some reason, from the time that I was a little bitty girl, I thought I should be paying more attention. And so I was the child that paid attention. Mm. And that's how I would hear about, you know, things that, like you say, a child should know that great-grandma Mandy had been exploited or abused by a white man. And she had her first child was by this white man and also born enslaved. But they didn't use that term abuse. They just said she had a baby by a white man. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I went to the census that I saw that she had only been 14 years old.
Wow.
And that she had been enslaved. So she couldn't say no. But nobody ever said that.
Well,
nobody ever talked about.
Yeah, you really couldn't say no in that situation.
You couldn't say no. And so I think that that was the other thing. I began to take on the feelings of people. I've always been a sensitive person, and I was very sensitive as a child, even though, you know, you don't really have the vocabulary to sort of talk about what it is that you're feeling. You just have the feeling. But I just remember that I would think on these folks. And so, you know, the fact that I'm only five generations removed from slavery, and here I am now a full professor. My mother's father could not read and write. I do not like to use the word illiterate. I find that mean-spirited. But I think on that. I think on having people hope and push things forward and not living to see what I've accomplished. And so they're with me all the time.
Well, even though you've created this fictional family, I think the experience that you write about in the love songs of W.E.B. Du Bois is something that has been repeated so often. And it's interesting. Michelle Commander recently did an anthology of voices from the abolition movement and Africans that were standing up for the abolition of slavery, and in the immediate aftermath and the stories that they set down about that time. Mm-hmm. These are so common stories that you've told of people unable to fight back against abuse and sexual assault. And I was really struck by something you said earlier. You know, your mother's great-grandmother's first memory was their father being sold away. And there was a really interesting telling moment in the 1880s and 1890s after emancipation where you had people looking for family members.
You had people looking for family members, placing advertisements in papers, you know. It's deeply moving and deeply sad, you know. And I think one of the things is that there is a lot of trauma, but there is joy and reconciliation in being able to name what actually happened, because so much of this history has been erased on purpose. Yes. You know, you don't have a lot of it taken down. And so, yes, people looking for their families, you know, placing ads in the newspapers, word of mouth, different things like that. And rarely they would find their family members, but many times they would not.
My guest today is Honoré Fanon Jeffers, an acclaimed poet and now fiction writer. She teaches creative writing and literature at the University of Oklahoma. Her first novel, which follows up on a recent poetry collection, The Age of Phyllis, which is highly acclaimed, is titled, her new novel is titled The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. It's published by Harper. And in it, you tell the story of, we alluded to her earlier, Ailey Pearl Garfield. She's from an upwardly mobile Black family in America. She is expected to become a doctor, but she decides to go into history. In the course of learning her history, which she had been learning her whole life through a series of family encounters, she learns dark secrets about her past, which inform some of her family and personal traumas she's actually experienced in her own life. Tell us a little about this character, Ailey Pearl Garfield. Ailey is a strong Black woman, and and she doesn't suffer fools, I will tell you that.
No, she does not. Ailey is a firecracker. You know, I wanted to have a very flawed main character. I know, you know, my editor made me promise, and I broke that promise that I about not going on to Goodreads and reading the reviews, you know, because they would hurt my feelings, right? But there was one Black woman who wrote that I had created the most unlikable main character she had ever encountered, but she loved my book. And I really considered that to be a triumph, you know, when I read that. Because what I wanted, I didn't want somebody who was from the pages of a fashion magazine and, you know, perfectly sweet and all of that. I wanted her to remind folks of very real people. You know, she is, and, you know, I want everybody to read my book, but especially this book is written for Black women so that we could see ourselves. And Ailey is a darker skinned girl. She's chubby. She is resistant to tradition. She will go off on people. She's human, as we're all human, you know? And I loved that about her. I wanted to make sure she was messy. And there, you know, are some bookstagrammers on Instagram who had started reading the book, and they would be all in my DM saying, why would Haley do da 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 da? Why? And, you know, that was so cute to me. I would, you know, there were younger folk, and I would be, you know, saying, well, you know, she's human. They're like, but I just don't get this. And da 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 da. And I loved it so much that they felt so involved in her life, you know, that when she would make decisions that weren't the best, that they would be angry at her. Because, you know, as she gets it together, and that's all I'll say, I wanted them to root for her, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I found interesting about her was she is a person that embraces her family, but she doesn't embrace very many other people. Did you find that?
She's socially awkward.
Yeah. No.
And I was socially awkward, if that's the question you were going to ask. I was a socially awkward child. And I didn't have very many friends, you know. So, yes, there are some inspirations, right? There are great departures from Ailey. I didn't have as much courage as Ailey has. You know, I made her very courageous and very pushy. You know, I was very conflict averse. But yes, she doesn't have very many friends. She's very socially awkward, but the family is so big. Nobody really cares that she doesn't have any other friends.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember my mother, when she was growing up, she had 6 brothers and sisters. And then she had her parents adopted informally another brother when my mother was grown. And my mother said when they would go, you know, when they would be in the neighborhood and the kids would come by in the neighborhood, you know, of course, you know, this was Central Georgia, so she grew up in a segregated, you know, country town. And they would say, can we go over such and such house? And grandma would say, it's 6 of y'all. You don't need anybody else. And so I remember, you know, only 2 of them are living, my mother and one of her brothers. But I remember, you know, when we would go to the family reunion and they would all be huddled up at the table together. And I would call them, even though they were adults, them James kids, because they were tight.
Yeah,
they were tight. And, you know, and my mother was a very courageous woman. And she would talk about how she would beat up boys because her brothers had taught her how to fight, you know. So that's the thing. You know, Ailey has this big, sprawling family down south. And to her, Chickasetta is her real home. The city is just where she stays 9 months out of the year. But when she goes down south to Chickasetta, that's her real home. And that's where she has family and then what, you know, is called fictive kin.
Right.
People who are like family, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and that comes out. In the second half of the book, Ailey begins investigating this Pritchard family that owns several of her ancestors and is a part of the family line. And part of the book is sort of like this deep investigation into, you know, the family tree in a way. And it kind of reminds me, you know, anybody who watches Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates, you know, when there is,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, it's like you get to slavery and you maybe get a generation into slavery and then it becomes,
that's it,
an unfathomable mystery. And, you know, she finds out these truths in the course of this book. And it sounds like you have been into the genealogical trail as well. And in the book, Ailey finds some answers about her family and about some of the traumas that plague her to this particular day. But it is this deep, deep dive. And I was interested about your decision to bring that part of the book out.
Well, I've spent over 30 years in the archives, off and on. I first encountered the historical archives when I was a journalism student. I left that program in 1990 at the Southern Historical Collections. And anybody that does historical research knows their collections are vast and renowned. And I got sucked in to the archives. There's just something about it, you know, knowing things that they don't know when they're writing their letters, right? Mm-hmm. That there's a war coming or that someone's going to pass away or, you know, something like that. It's both sad but fascinating. And so when I knew that at some point Ailey was going to become a historian, and I won't give too many spoilers, I then began to think about what would be some of the things that she found in the archives. And so a lot of the work took my coming up with these faux entries into the archives, right? Uh-huh. My editor was just really floored that I could, you know, sort of mimic the voice, the voices of these historical people in letters and journals and all of that. And that's because I have spent a lot of time in the archives. I have done genealogical research, but as you say, once you hit 1860, most of us don't have any more records. Mm. I mean, you know, and I think that's also why I created these faux, you know, these fictional documents. In a way, it was a healing for me that I could, in the same way that I had created family for myself when I was in graduate school at University of Alabama by writing these stories about fictional characters, I created a whole past that I'll probably never be able to find, you know,
right,
through the novel. It was the way that I soothed myself, you know.
Well, it's an interesting path that the book takes, and it's well worth the journey. The name of the book is The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois. Honoré, congratulations, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate you.
University of Oklahoma creative writing and literature professor Honoré Fanon Jeffers, poet and fiction writer, now with the publication of her first novel, The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois. It's published by Harper. It's getting incredible reviews. A book launch event will take place at Magic City Books in a virtual setting Thursday evening, August 26th at 7 o'clock. You can learn more at magiccitybooks.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.